Lakers Rockets series starts up on Saturday. Today, we're going to preview what we expect to see coming up in game one. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. We are the Lakers Collective. Happy to see you all here. If you haven't done so yet, please hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Guys, how are we doing?
What's up, guys? Playoff basketball already is so much fun. So I'm just excited to see a bunch more of it this weekend.
Same. I finished my rewatch of the season series, went through all the numbers, did my series preview last night on my channel. So excited to dive into it today.
Yeah, a lot of stuff obviously to get into in this one. The Lakers, the heavy underdogs going into this with no Luka Doncic, no Austin Reeves. But I think that creates a lot of unpredictability in this series. And I think we're in for a number of different surprises as we get into it. But I guess let's start with the offensive side of the basketball. No Luka, no Austin. That's going to create some challenges for the Lakers. Jason, why don't we start with you? What are you looking for from the Lakers on the offensive side of the ball as they approach a Houston defense that has been pretty stingy and is going to have a size and athleticism edge over the Lakers?
Yeah, so I think the key to the series is going to be shot making and play finishing against a certain level of intensity. So I couldn't help but think as I was watching these play-in games over the week, and I'll just use last night as an example. Like, Al Horford hits those four threes, and they're all generated from advantage creation from Steph. One's a pick and pop. One's like a pick and slip where he makes a read to the corner, and then Gui Santos drives a closeout, and then he gets a corner three. Another one's like an inverted ball screen with Steph and Gui Santos where Gui Santos gets downhill and hits Horford in the corner. The transition one was pretty wide open. But like, even though the advantage was created by Steph, you're playing against a good playoff team in the Clippers that are probably more talented than their record would lead you to believe. And there's an intensity to the closeouts that just made those shots tougher than they appear on the surface. And Horford just stood in there and knocked them down, you know? And like, that's what we see when we watch these games. And I mean, like, even just look at like the Charlotte Hornets game and just the difference in their ability to hit threes in a regular season context versus against a good physical playoff defense. It's just, I can count on LeBron and Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart. And I'm going to include JJ Redick in this because I do think that the Lakers have like a strategy advantage in this series. Like, I think they're going to play smarter basketball from the top down. They're going to create advantages against this team by putting Şengün in action and putting Reed Shepard in action consistently. LeBron posting up matchups that he likes, yada yada yada. You guys get the point. From there, it's going to be about like, can Rui Hachimura hit his catch-and-shoot threes against intense closeouts? Can Marcus Smart hit his catch-and-shoot threes against intense closeouts? Can Jackson Hayes and DeAndre Ayton, and I'm going to emphasize DeAndre Ayton here specifically because he struggled with this and over the course of the season, can he catch and finish in traffic with a lot of congestion and intensity and physicality? Jake LaRavia hitting threes and making some of the plays that he has to make driving closeouts. Like, to me, the biggest swing factor of the series for the Lakers on the offensive end of the floor is going to be role players finishing advantages against really intense defense. I think there are a couple of other swing factors, like LeBron's pull-up jump shot. That is going to be a big one in this series. I would emphasize DeAndre Ayton post-ups as like a like if he's hitting turnaround jumpers over his right shoulder, like little things like that that could raise the ceiling in one way or another. But in terms of the largest, like, large sample size thing that can swing the series, it's going to be role players finishing against intensity.
Yeah, I agree. I think the ability for these other guys to hit shots, this is going to be a series where there's going to be a number of possessions where things don't go exactly the way the Lakers want them to. And part of that is just the defensive talent of the Houston Rockets, the athleticism they provide. When you've got guys like Amen Thompson that are going to be blowing things up, there are going to be situations where the Lakers are going to have to create, and they are missing two of their three best creators out there. They're going to have to create something out of nothing. And that's where I look at, you know, can Rui Hachimura get to his one dribble pull up 15 to 20 footer and knock that down with consistency? Because there's going to be possessions where the Lakers try to do something, the Rockets blow that up. LeBron can only be on the floor so much. Guys like Rui Hachimura are going to have to be able to create plays. You're going to have to be able to say, hey, everything else got blown up. DA, here's the ball in the post. Get us a decent look. And you're going to have other guys that can knock down shots like that. Jovan, what are your keys on the offensive side of the ball for the Lakers here in this one?
This, to me, is the side where I have the most questions. I think to Jason's earlier point, like, I trust JJ to concoct some sort of defensive game plan that can hit at some of Houston's weak points offensively, which is their ability to handle pressure and make quick decisions and process quickly. And they can struggle with turnovers. They had a nearly 19% turnover percentage against the Lakers in the three games, which is actually higher than the Lakers' turnover percentage in the three games. And that would be by far the worst in the NBA over the course of a full season. So the Lakers did a pretty good job at disrupting Houston, famously that second game against KD, where he had, I think, six or seven turnovers, and he's like retreating and stepping on the backcourt line. He's getting an 8-second violation. Like, they just really were able to disrupt KD. My questions primarily stem on the offensive end, where I think my biggest question for the team is just, do they have enough firepower offensively? And looking at some of the numbers, with LeBron on and no Luka and no Austin this season, 118.8 offensive rating, which would be the third best offense in the NBA. Now, the context within that is that majority of those minutes and possessions came in bench units and against bench groups. And you have the randomness of just like that occurring throughout the course of the season, and not necessarily against, you know, Houston was sixth in defensive rating. So we're talking about one of the best defenses in the league. And also they're able to now key in on what a LeBron-led offense looks like. So I have some questions about that. Then if we just look at the final five games of the season, which does include OKC with no LeBron, but also includes LA playing a couple of tanking teams and a couple of teams that were decimated with injuries, Lakers just had a 116 offensive rating, which was 12th. Over the course of the full season, but still, like, I think it needs to be like a little bit higher against this Houston team to be able to win this series. So if you look at just the season series, Luka and Austin combined for 48 points, 12 assists, 35 shots per game, and 13 free throw attempts per game. That is a ton of offensive creation and firepower that the Lakers are now without and are going to have to replicate. Of course, LeBron will assume a certain amount of usage, Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, but it's going to be a group effort. And my big question here is just, can the Lakers create enough advantages? Because watching how they use LeBron in the season series, it was a lot of off-ball stuff. It was a lot of LeBron in like the corner coming off of a wide pin down. It was a lot of LeBron in transition. He did do a great job of turning defense into offense. The Lakers, I think one smart thing that they did, was, especially in that third game, was because Houston crashes so aggressively with all five guys, the Lakers started leaking out. And if they could somehow secure the rebound, all of a sudden they had a guy past half court ready for an outlet pass and a layup. And they had a sequence there in the second half where they had like three or four straight just layups in transition because they got the defense rebound and they leaked out. So I think the Lakers are gonna have to be aggressive in that sense of finding easy opportunities. Like the defense can help the offense here, but when it comes to, it's like the only guy right now I trust offensively is LeBron. I think you will get a certain level of production from Luke and Marcus and Rui and DA, but those guys have all had their ups and downs throughout the course of the season. Like Luke did not play well or shoot well. Like this was his stretch of the season where he kind of had a slump against Houston. Marcus is up and down, and Rui and DA are very much dependent on the offense creating for them rather than them self-creating. So I don't have a great answer as to like how this will look, because I think this will be our first look at like what this group looks like against a real defense, because they, you know, LeBron didn't play against OKC. So I think that I have more questions than answers with like the offensive end. It's just, to me, can they create advantages consistently enough? And how are they going to replace the Luka? I mean, Luka averaged 34 a game against this team. Like, that's a massive amount of production you have to replace.
I think one of the interesting things when we look at what the Lakers are going to try to do on the offensive end of the floor, you mentioned getting out in transition. If you can secure the rebound, that's very difficult to do against Houston. They're great offensive rebounding team, historically great for a good chunk of the season. Then they lost Steven Adams and it dipped a little bit. They're still an incredible offensive rebounding team. But if they can get that defensive board and get out and run, there may be opportunities there, which is interesting because the Lakers on the season are a bottom third team when it comes to pace. They've been much closer to what the Houston Rockets are, which I believe they rank 28th or 29th. The Rockets do in
the 29th.
Pace. So the Lakers have been trying to pay. Thank you, 29th. So the Lakers have been trying to play at a fairly similar pace to the one the Houston Rockets have played at, except for when they've got those LeBron and the Banshees groups out there. So one of the things that I'm interested in this series is, can the Lakers, with very little time to prepare overall, we're talking about they lost Luka and Austin, what, a week and a half ago, something like that, to change up the way they go about things so significantly? Because I do think the pace factor is going to be an important one. And if the Lakers do play slow it down basketball against the Houston Rockets, I don't know if they're going to be able to win with that style of play, which is what they employed the last time they saw Houston and is what their preferred style is. So, Jason, what are you looking for in terms of controlling the pace of this game? Is it on the Lakers to push down on the gas pedal, or is there a path to success if they continue to play more slow it down basketball?
Yeah, it's a delicate balance because I agree with you in that it's one of those margins where effort can be a difference maker. And I'd argue like one of the ways that the Lakers could extend this series and or get an upset is to outwork Houston. And if you can put yourself in a situation where it's like run with us, you know, crash with us, scrap with us, that's certainly a way where the Lakers, if they outworked Houston, could gain advantage. The tricky thing is like this team is just so athletic, and any sort of environment where the Lakers have to outwork Houston so dramatically to make up for that athleticism advantage. And so I think you got to be careful. I think it'll honestly look a lot like it did in the regular season, to your point, where like the pace is relatively low, but the fast break points are relatively high, essentially meaning that translates to like selective running, like running when you see real opportunities, running when you see, you know, like, so for instance, if the Lakers are switching and, you know, KD or Reed Shepard take a pull-up three at the top of the key and you can hit Jackson or DA on leak outs. Or if LeBron makes a read and sees that the defensive rebound is going to get secured and leaks out and seeing those kick ahead opportunities. But again, like, I think it's just tough to get into a track meet with a team that's a lot more athletic than you. And that's where it could get particularly tricky. And I, again, it's like, it's just every time I try to talk myself into these like specific dynamics, I always just run into the realism of the talent differential and the athleticism differential. But I don't disagree with you that like if the Lakers ended up in a slow down half court battle, they could be in some trouble. The one thing I'll say in terms of the selectiveness of it all is, there, to Jovan's point, there's a version of this where the Lakers can cause real problems for Houston with their half court defense. Whether it's, you know, Houston was one of the worst offenses in the league this year against zone. We talked a little bit about this on Monday. They take more than half of their shots against the zone from three, and they make less than a third of them. But then again, it's hard to rebound against zones, right? So like there's a bunch of, we'll see zone, we'll see all the things that we talk about when we talk about the defensive end of the floor. If you can force turnovers and bad shots that spark transition opportunities, that's great. But at the same time, like their set half court defense has a much better chance of getting stops than them being caught in transition going the other way. So like it's just a delicate balance to where I think being selective is smart, running when it makes sense, but like making sure that you don't end up in a track meet where the other team is just more athletic than you.
Do you think the Lakers' offensive production will ultimately be tied to how good they are defensively at forcing turnovers? Like, is that ultimately going to be what this comes down to? Can the Lakers get stops and turnovers and then use that to get out and run with these LeBron and the Banshees lineups?
Yeah, absolutely. I would argue like, the team was actually worse at this when it was Austin and Luka.
Yeah.
Because Luka would take these bad step back threes sometimes and just kind of drift into the lane instead of getting back. And then Austin would just bring such a downhill attack that like when you'd have a big man rolling and Austin screaming downhill, we would typically only have one person above the break in our like transition get back kind of like a floor balance. I think if the Lakers control that kind of stuff, like just real basic floor balance, like let's crash out of the corners, but let's make sure we have our floor balance out of the top and that guys are getting back and stopping man and ball. Like that's just a basic thing where if they don't hemorrhage points in the fast break going the other way, it just gives them a better chance to keep things close, and then maybe LeBron can out-execute late in the game.
So the final point I want to get to before we leave offense and get over to, you know, really the defensive side of the ball, and of course we'll talk a lot about the rebounding and all that, but JJ in practice last couple of days has really harped upon the turnovers, and that is one area where I think the Lakers can help not necessarily win the possession battle, but at least mitigate some of the possession battle deficiencies or discrepancies that you're going to have, just because Houston does such a great job on the offensive glass. As if, as Jovan referenced earlier, they had a Houston at a 19% turnover rate. The Lakers have to be very, very careful, very deliberate with the basketball to not turn the ball over, because that's the way they can sort of make up for some of the extra shot attempts that Houston is going to get on the offensive end, simply on the offensive glass. So, Jovan, when we're looking at a Lakers team that has had five regular season games played without Luka and Austin, what can they do to avoid the hiccups, the turnover issues that can occur just from a lack of familiarity? Are there things that they can do in order to make sure that they're not coughing the ball up and that they're maximizing possessions?
Yeah, and I just looked it up here just out of curiosity. So I mentioned Lakers had or have a 116 offensive rating over their past five games, which are the five games post Luka and Austin injuries. They have the seventh worst turnover percentage in the NBA over that span. They were 24th in the NBA in turnover percentage. So, I mean, this comes back to what I was talking about in terms of the advantage creation, where Jason's been talking about LeBron's jumper, and I think that's a big swing factor here, where LeBron has just not been the same caliber of shooter this season that he was the last couple of years. But I also think there's been some slippage with the ball handling, and LeBron has had some of these uncharacteristic turnovers where he'll just be like dribbling the ball and kind of just lose it. And just he's kind of like fumbled the ball a little bit more as the primary guy than we're accustomed to. So you couple in that with like, if Luke Kennard is being hounded by Amen Thompson 94 feet, like what does that look like? How does Luke Kennard handle that? Because he did not face anywhere. Like that was something that kind of surprised me. Like none of the teams outside of OKC really like pressed the Lakers or pressuring them 94 feet. They haven't really faced a defense like that post Luka Austin. So what does that look like? If I'm Ime, I'm saying like, Amen Thompson, go make Luke Kennard's life a living hell, and don't let this dude dribble. And Luke does have, I think he's an underrated ball handler, and he's pretty quick. But Amen Thompson might be the best athlete in the NBA, so that's going to be a tough assignment for him. And then Marcus Smart, like one thing that stood out to me in rewatching the games was like they just put Jabari Smith on Marcus Smart anytime Marcus Smart was out there. And like he had a couple of times where he took him off the dribble and used a shoulder check to like float something up. But Marcus Smart was not really a fact. I mean, the second game he had a big three where they rotated off of him and they're going to give him open threes. But Marcus as like the primary ball handler or secondary ball handler was not really a factor against Houston in the season series. So those are the three guys that are going to need to initiate and create advantages. And I think LeBron can do it because we have 23 years of LeBron doing that. And even if he's not quite the same level he used to be, he can find ways to attack the defense. I have legitimate questions of Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart being like your second and third ball handlers in a series against this type of defense with this size and this length. So I do have some concerns with the turnovers. Now, looking at the season series, Lakers did a better job than Houston did, but they still had nearly a 16% turnover percentage, which is really high. So Houston was able to wreak some havoc on that end. But it's just tough to extrapolate it into a series because Luka and Austin were the two primary ball handlers for the entirety of you know the matchup. So we just don't really know what it's going to look like. But I think if you just say Amen Thompson, go disrupt Marcus Smart or go disrupt Luke Kennard, I think he can do that, and I think he's going to win that battle. So now you have to is Jake LaRavia maybe stepping up, or how are the Lakers kind of funneling the offense? Because I don't really trust like DeAndre Ayton's not a passing hub. Rui is not someone I want making decisions off the dribble. So they only have like three guys I would say I trust in terms of like a ball handling shot creation role. And I think you can kind of cut two of them off or at least make like neutralize them to some degree, where it really puts a lot on just like LeBron has to play perfect basketball for 40 minutes to give the Lakers a shot. And that's where I think, again, some of the offensive questions come in.
Yeah, you know, you just mentioned that. LeBron's probably going to play 40 minutes. What do the 8 minutes look like when LeBron's off the floor? That's one of my big questions going into this. Who's on the floor? And are they going to be able to generate any kind of offensive production without LeBron James out there? It's going to be tough.
I mean, the minutes, I think they have like a minus 26 net rating with none of the big three on the floor. And Jason's talked about this of like, they get destroyed when those three are all off. And that is a big concern.
Yeah. This sounds so doom and gloom. The farther we get into this, it's always, well, the Lakers can't do this, but
the thing I continue to say is take the two leading scorers off of any playoff team,
sure.
Like take them off, take Shea and J-Dub off OKC, take Jokic and Murray off Denver, take Wemby and Fox off San Antonio, or Tatum and Brown, who, like pick your team. That team's probably going to be a pretty heavy underdog in round one, if not losing the first round, even with some of the deeper teams like OKC or Boston or San Antonio. So that's just, unfortunately, the reality of the situation right now for LA.
All right, let's jump over to the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, a big part of that conversation is going to be rebounding. But schematically, Jason, what do you expect to see from JJ Redick defensively? What is he going to try to throw at the Houston Rockets to get stops?
So I think there's obviously two ways to kind of look at it, screening actions and then like ISOs or one-on-ones, if you want to talk about them in that context. I think most of the one-on-ones are going to look the same, which is anything that's on a cleared side, they will strong side zone, play the middle, and any sort of baseline spin, the strong side zone guy will then send the double as he spins towards the baseline. Anything that's above that sideline area, or let's just say with an occupied corner, I think we'll just see a lot of aggressive gapping. And then essentially it'll be a question of whether or not Houston can move the ball through that and hit the catch and shoot threes, and or Kevin Durant in particular hitting tough contested shots over the top. Ball screens, I think the main thing is to kind of mix things up. Essentially not allow Kevin Durant in particular to see the same look every single time. So I want him to see some double teams before he gets to the ball screen. I want to see some blitzes and some shocks. I want to see some high drop and some low drop. I just want to see like a steady diet of mixing the coverages up so that KD can't find any specific rhythm. If he gets into a rhythm where it's like, okay, we're at the level every time, and it's just dribble off pocket pass, dribble off pocket pass, dribble off pocket pass, or it's a deep drop, and it's just like dribble off midi, dribble off midi, dribble off midi, or even the double teams, if you just do it over and over and over again, I think you play into the strength of KD, which is ability to gain rhythm, whereas his weakness is his ability to process. So I think mixing up coverages is the key. Reed Sheppard, it's tough. Like, I would personally run drop, and I should include switching with KD as well. I'd mix in switching as well. But I would run drop with Reed specifically because I think that under playoff intensity, he'll probably dip into the low 30s on pull-up threes. And I think keeping our bigs close to the rim gives us our best chance to defensive rebound. I think switching could get really dangerous if you do it in a large dose, unless you can somehow convince, you know, these guys to sprint back into the play from the top of the key and go after contested rebounds, which is just really difficult and a lot to ask. So I actually think, to Jovan's point earlier, I think the Lakers are as well equipped to guard Houston and guard Houston well as they were even before the injuries. Even though Austin and Luka are good defenders, we'll just have other good defenders on the floor. I mean, relative to the talent on the roster, I should say. The real other swing factor there is obviously the defensive rebounding. And I think this is where it gets tricky, because like the advantage of loading up is you get the ball out of the star's hands and you concede these threes to these other guys, but you also concede runways to them. You concede athletes, guys like Tari Eason and Amen Thompson, a bunch of empty floor in front of them to just come sprinting in to try to go get a loose ball. And like Amen Thompson in particular, he can like straight up out vertically jump everybody in a Laker jersey, which makes him in particular really, really difficult to handle in this type of situation. And again, it's going to be a team effort. It's going to be box outs. It's going to be crackdown rebounding, sandwich rebounding, like every little fundamental thing that they're going to have to do. And one of the things that I think is a good thing for this matchup is like having Marcus Smart back in the fold and LeBron in particular. I think those two guys will preach the toughness and at least the competitiveness to at least get them to try to fight. But we all need to be prepared for them just to lose a lot of these battles. The question is, can they concede a 37% offensive rebound percentage instead of a 47% mm-hmm. offensive rebound percentage? That really, to me, is the difference. I think they're going to get a lot of first possession stops. But if there's like five times a game where they win a battle for a rebound that's contested versus losing a battle, it could be the difference between a game being close and them losing by 20. And so, again, I'm not too worried about the coverages. I think JJ is going to have some good plans, but it's just going to be about heart and hustle there at the end of the game. For the record, we watched last night a bunch of late 30s legends win a game against a way more talented team because they wanted it more. And again, it came down to several things, but like you can, heart and hustle can go a long way. And I will say like that, I actually trust their ability because the Lakers are a pretty big team. They've got some big dudes. I actually think the Lakers have a better chance to hang with Houston on the offensive glass than they do in the open floor.
They've got some big dudes, but they have to play like big dudes, right? Yeah. That's what they need. They've got some guys who can physically, I think, could rebound the basketball and help you out in that way. But unfortunately, you also have some guys who simply don't. And it's going to be a question of, can the Lakers shift that in this series? I'm curious to see how often the Lakers switch. We know they like to switch everything. Does that then lead to situations where it's Luke Kennard trying to keep Alperen Sengun off the offensive glass, right? Things of that situation of that nature are going to be a concern in this series. Do the Lakers start to mix it up? I think that's the biggest thing. If we want to look at, you know, almost like a baseball style analogy here, the Lakers, when you take what they really want to do against this team and given their lack of athletes, given that you're missing Luka, given that you're missing Austin, I think the Lakers are going to have to do everything they can to junk up this game defensively and try to keep Houston off balance. They can't just overpower them with the fastball, boom, 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 and get them out. That's not going to work against this Houston team. Instead, the Lakers are going to have to resort to some trickery. They're going to have to use some different looks and try to keep the Rockets off balance and guessing what's coming next. They're going to have to mix up their pitches, and that's going to be on JJ Redick to try to throw a lot of different looks, whether that means going zone. You could do that. Of course, there's some hedging and all sorts of things, but Jovan, what do you think? Given that the Lakers have been so switch heavy, they're going to do it. I'm concerned about it specifically against Houston. Do they have other pitches they can turn to? Can they start throwing the curve? Can they start throwing the changeup? Is JJ going to be able to successfully implement other types of defenses into this matchup?
He has to. That's the only way the Lakers have a chance in this series. So I had Krangis on last night to break down the series, and he's tracking every coverage that, you know, teams are running and just his lineup data and whatnot. And so actually Houston is most effective against switching defenses because they can then target smaller defenders. And especially with KD, if a lot of what happened in the season series was they'd run some sort of ball screen with KD and a center, get DeAndre Ayton or Jackson Hayes switched out, and then KD can attack that player, which he should be able to create an advantage with his handle and his wiggle. And either KD makes the jumper, or now you have whoever's, and it was a lot of times Marcus, but sometimes a smaller defender trying to box out a Alperen Sengun, a Clint Capella, a Steven Adams. Like, no more Steven Adams, but it's still like that's part of what Houston does, is they will pick at your weakest defender and bring them either into the action or run some sort of action to have them trying to box out a much bigger and stronger player. So I think if the Lakers are just switching everything as the base coverage, that to me would be concerning. I think they need to mix in some doubling, some zone, some double big looks. I think the small ball didn't look, wasn't as effective in the season series. I think that, like, this is just a matchup you have to play bigger. So even looking at like the rotation, and I think there's a clear top eight, I might at this point, just go with Maxi Kleba as the ninth guy and say, we're going to run a lot of Maxi at the four, and it's going to be Maxi with DA or Maxi with Jackson. And you're going to have these funky lineups where you might have like Marcus or Luke as the one guard, and then like Jake LaRavia or Vando is like the shooting guard in the lineup technically, right? And it's just going to be these big, funky lineups that you're going with like four dudes, 6'9" or above. And you might just have to do that and you know, zone that up, or maybe you're switching 1 through 5, 1 through 4, whatever. But like those ones, I'm more okay with the switching because it's guys of a certain size. Yeah. This is also where I will bring up, I disagree with the starting group because I just, the core, one of the core things with that starting group is I don't like the DA, LeBron, Rui front line together. The lineup data has bore that out over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, JJ is going back to the DA, LeBron, Rui front court. And if you just look at the different lineup combinations throughout the season, Rui and Luke, -8. Points per 100 possessions. Rui and DA, -0.6, which got boosted later in the season as the Lakers beat some of those bad teams. Luke and DA, -11 points per 100 possessions. Rui, Luke and DA, -15 points per 100 possessions. And in that lineup, I think it's like a 107 offensive rating and a 122 defensive rating. So they're bad on both sides of the ball. I don't know, like I don't know what numbers they're looking at, but I'd be like not even trying to play that starting lineup together, let alone like start it together and have all five of those guys playing like 30 plus minutes and like 15 to 20 minutes together. I just think that is a mistake in strategy already going into game one. If the Lakers keep that group now, maybe they go with Jake. B-Ball Index has this tool where you can look at projected lineups, and the best projected lineup for the Lakers going into the series was Jackson Hayes, LeBron James, Jake LaRavia, Luke Kennard, Marcus Smart. That is the lineup I would start. Now I get politically DA is going to have to start, but the second best projected lineup was DA at the five with Jake at the three. So, I mean, that would be the lineup I would go with, would be Jake instead of Rui. I think that balances it out, but I have real concerns on the defensive end with that group specifically, because now you're bringing in like Jake's off the bench, Vando's off the bench, Jackson's off the bench. I think all three of those guys are going to play a big role in LA's defense. And if you just look at it specifically as like a like-for-like swap, Luka going to Rui, massive defensive rebounding downgrade. Even Austin going to Luke. Luke had the Dallas game, but Dallas game aside, Austin is a better rebounder than Luke for the entirety of the season. So it's like, I just think the rebounding part, I am a little bit afraid of with that group, because we have enough of a sample size to be a bit concerned with that front line, to say nothing of also Luke being like the duck and the target for Houston's offense.
No, I know we've talked about starting lineups a lot, but I'm in full agreement with you in terms of having Jake out there. I think particularly when we're talking about the offensive rebounds, can certainly be challenging for the Lakers in the paint, but it's also those mid-range offensive rebounds, the missed threes that have the long bounce. Those are the ones that Amen Thompson is just all over. I don't trust Rui as much to go after those as Jake. And I'm not saying Jake's going to win that battle, but he's got a better shot at doing it and reacting to the ball and just having that scrap that's necessary to go and battle for those mid-range offensive rebounds as well, or keep those away from the Houston Rockets. So I'm in agreement with you that I do think the starting lineup is a mistake. That said, I'm not surprised that this is the starting lineup that JJ's gone to, because whenever push comes to shove, it seems to be that his default is offense. Lean into the offensive side of the ball rather than it just seems to be how he's wired. Now, my hope is that he will be quick on the trigger to go away from that lineup if it's clearly not working. I think that's, you know, the other piece. We talk about the offense, we talk about the defense. A lot of this series is going to come down to JJ Redick pushing the right buttons and also being willing to take some chances in this series and hope that those things can work out. He's going to have to be a bit unorthodox, and JJ Redick versus Ime Udoka is going to be a very important battle in this series, aside from just the players on the court. So I'm curious to see how that plays out and how quickly JJ is able to shift and react to what's happening out there on the floor on the fly.
We shall see.
We shall see. Are we doing predictions?
I do favor JJ in the matchup, to be clear, because the way Houston handled those traps was embarrassing. It was very embarrassing.
That was rough. That was rough. All right, let's give our predictions for the series. Jason, let's start with you. What are you predicting here?
I'm going Houston in five. I think that the Lakers will win one of the first two games. I think it could be either, whether it's they catch Houston off guard with an intense effort and a good game plan in game one, or catch Houston in the lack of urgency of game two. But I think it's going to be really difficult for the Lakers to win in Houston. And then I think if they're down 3-1 coming back to LA, it's just going to be hard to summon the belief to put forth the necessary effort. I think if they did push it to six, it would just be a huge win. I think it would just be a huge sign of just the competitive spirit of the team. I do think the games will be relatively close just because of Houston's offense and some of the issues that they can have. But I think that as games progress, especially that physicality and athleticism will wear them down, especially when you're trying to lead yourself with a 41-year-old star. So again, I'm going Rockets in five. I think if the Lakers pushed it to six, it would be a big win.
I'm assuming you're approaching it as though Luka and Austin, no return, yeah, not coming back for the series.
I never considered for even a second that they would come back in this series. I think it'd be foolish even if they were somewhat able to step onto the floor under the circumstances. I just think they're drawn dead in the next round no matter what. So I just think the Lakers should be keeping their eye on the prize for next season. So even with all the reporting, the weird reporting that came out over the last few days, I never considered them actually playing in this series.
All right. Jovan?
So I'm going to consider it. I think one of them is going to return at some point. I don't know what game it's going to be, but I think they're going to push it. So I'm going to go Lakers. I mean, I almost said Lakers.
Lakers in seven, baby.
I'm going Rockets in six with the caveat. So I'm going to have like multiple caveats here. But that's my official prediction because I'm aggregating several potential outcomes here. Like I will say that this is maybe the toughest since I've been covering the Lakers. This has probably been the toughest series to project just because I truly don't think we have a clear idea of what this group is going to look like in a playoff series without Luka and Austin. Like game one to me will heavily influence how I feel about their odds to win the series positively or negatively, just because they played a couple of unserious basketball teams, a couple of serious basketball teams that were decimated, and then punted the OKC game, although they were going to get blown out either way. So it's like, I don't even know how much I take away from those final five games of the season. I feel like there's a blank slate element going into game one. That said, I think if you tell me 100% Luka and Austin are out, I would pick Rockets in five. I think one of them will return at some point, like game four, game five, and that will help propel the Lakers for a game to like get an extra game and extend it to six. So I think the series is going to play out. They split the first two. They go to Houston, lose both the games there. They come back, they win game five, and then they go back to Houston, lose game six there. Now, if Luka could somehow come back in like game three or game four at the earliest and like look pretty good, I give the Lakers a chance to like somehow push this to seven, and I would favor them if it somehow went seven, but that's like a very, to me, like narrow outcome. And you're playing with a lot of fire there of the re-injury risk and just, okay, you beat Houston. Now you're about to get swept by OKC. So I'm on the Jason side of, I think they should only return if it's like very minimal risk and they're 90%+ there physically. If it's like a 70% physical where like you can play, but you're really risking re-injury and like you're on a severe minutes restriction of like 18 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that, I think you got to wait till they're like healthier. But I get like Austin and Luka are both the utmost competitors. They both want to play if they have any chance of playing. So I think they're going to push it. That's where I give them like an extra game with one of those guys. But, barring both of them coming back by like game three or four and also looking like themselves, I just think Houston has too big of a talent advantage.
Agree. I'm in lockstep with you, Jovan. When I look at it's the second thing you said there. It's not just them coming back, but it's them coming back and being themselves, right? Just coming back, I think, is relatively unlikely. But coming back and being themselves after having not played for, even if they were healthy, you don't play for a month, there's going to be some rust, right? That's going to be incorporated. But you add in an injury factor, and I just don't think they're going to be, if they do come back, as impactful as they were prior to the injury. And so I think that's going to matter as well. But I also think that we'll see enough turn back the clock performances from LeBron. Even at 41 years old, I think he still has gas left in the tank. So I do think we go to six games, but unfortunately, I'm going Rockets in six. All right, we need to get to everybody's questions and comments. But first, a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. Prize Picks does a fantastic... Hey, look at that!
We did it.
I did it right.
We did it.
What do you know? What do you know?
we thoroughly, for those of you guys who weren't here last on Monday, we thoroughly botched this. But it's
I made a mess of this last time. Use code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over at Prize Picks. Link is in the description down below. We're going to make a few selections here. Let's see here. LaMelo Ball. Who likes to trip people. 23.5 points against the Orlando Magic. Jason, do we think he does more or less than that?
A lot of switching from Orlando, and it's going to be a pretty ugly physical game. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of that one. What else we got?
We've got Carl Anthony Towns, 3.5 assists. Rui Hachimura, 16.5 points. LeBron, 25.5 points.
I would take the over on LeBron there.
LeBron. Okay, I do think
that's a good one. I like that.
Gonna get shots up there. Dez Bane, 19.5 points. Or what about Jokic? Points, rebounds, and assists combined, 51.5.
So Jokic and Jamal Murray are averaging a combined 67 points per game against Minnesota this year. Minnesota really defends their action 2-on-2 and prioritizes Jokic as a scorer. So I do really like that one.
Okay, so we're going to go more than 51.5 points, rebounds, and assists for Jokic. If you guys want to get in on it, $10 entry fee, win you $30. Code is HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly. And if you're going to play, please do so responsibly. Thank you to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. All right, let's see if I can get us back to normal without messing things up too much here. Oh, no, it went away. There it is.
You can do it.
There we go. All right.
We're back.
So let's get into some of our questions and comments. We had a couple that came in before we officially kicked off the show. Christopher wants to know, more worried about the offense or defense? Offense is shorthanded without Luka and Austin Reeves. Defense may suffer with Smart and LeBron having more load on offense. Amen and Alperen Sengun killed us this season with their offense. I think we were in agreement that we were more concerned about or more unclear about what was going to happen with the Lakers on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. To put it very simply, just like the Lakers have a better chance to get stops against a Houston flawed offense. I mean, really, it's that simple. The Lakers have a talent disadvantage and Houston's defense is just way better than their offense.
Francis says, do you see us playing any small ball against a supersized Houston team?
I don't. Maybe a little bit.
I think, like, similar to the point that Trevor made about JJ being inclined to favor offense over defense, I think he is inclined to play small ball. And by small ball, we're talking, like, I think it has to be some version of Rui, LeBron, and Vando as, like, the three front court. Like, if you go Rui, LeBron, Vando, Jake, that's not, like, that small, right? But I could see a situation if DA or Jackson is having a really rough series and maybe Maxey doesn't have his legs, then like maybe there's a scenario in which they play small for like a little bit, but I don't think it should be something that they consistently go to.
I see them doing it for stretches just to get throw a curveball, but all right. can the increase in ball movement without Luka maybe offset Luka and AR a little bit?
Luka is the primary, like, this is part of the big, this is one of the big reasons why I have a hard time seeing the Lakers being super competitive in this series. The primary driver of our success in March was Luka Doncic. Just full stop. That dude is, any sort of concerns you have about ball handling, responsibility kind of heavily indexing towards him is completely made up for the fact that he's just insanely good. And so I don't see any universe where we're better on offense without him.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I think that there's an unpredictability element to just, and the Lakers kind of had some of that down the stretch of the season where It's just you don't have as much film on a LeBron-led offense with Luke in a certain role, with Marcus in a certain role. But maybe they could catch them by surprise to some degree in like game one. But after that, you have the film, you have the game plan. And the Lakers, one of the things one thing I wish I made a point on earlier was like, despite the Lakers' defensive improvement over the second half of the season, they actually rebounded the ball worse, which is a little bit concerning. And they did get dominated in the season series. Houston averaged 15 offensive rebounds per game, which is far too many. But one of the other things too was that for all of the lineup data hand-wringing with Luka of like his on-off was not the same as some of the other MVP candidates, over the final couple months of the season, it was just as dramatic as Shea and Wemby and Jokic. And particularly on the offensive end, the Lakers offense cratered when Luka was not on the floor. I think they had a low 110s offensive rating. So that's another factor here of just like, I know for some people, the aesthetics of the game can be better when Luka's off the floor because the ball is moving side to side a little bit more. But make no mistake, like the Lakers are very dependent on Luka offensively, and not having him is going to be a big blow.
Yeah, I think it's not even just his offensive production. It's Luka as a rebounder that you're going to be missing that out there. And obviously he does so much on the offensive end. We don't want to try to minimize that at all, but you're going to miss Luka as a rebounder. Yes, the ball can move more on the offensive end without him out there, but he is an engine. And we talked about just a few minutes ago about what does it look like when LeBron's off the court? I mean, the Lakers had the great luxury of, okay, LeBron's out, Austin's out. Hey, Luka is an offense by himself, effectively. And so you're going to be missing him out there in this game. This comment said, I feel confident we see Luka in the first round. I feel confident Luka will want to play in the first round. I'm not confident we're actually going to see him play in the first round. If it happens, it happens. But if it happens, I hope that means that he is truly as close as possible to 100%, and the risk for re-injury is minimal. I think Luka will want to play in round one and is going to do everything he can to get out there on the floor. But I am concerned, guys, that this could wind up being a situation where the team needs to protect the player from himself.
Yeah, cooler heads have to prevail here. There's just, there again, we talked about this on Monday. The Lakers actually flashed a championship ceiling in March with their trio, which they can reasonably bring the trio back and potentially put better players around them next year. There's a version of this where the Lakers can compete for a title next year. You don't risk that so that you can maybe make things more competitive against Houston and get your ass kicked by OKC.
This comment said, Kelly Oubre is a free agent. Should he be a target for the Lakers this summer?
I like Kelly Oubre. He made some big shots last night in the game against Orlando. I look at him as a four more than a three. The one thing with Oubre is like, I don't think he's a long-term solution, and you have LeBron as a short-term solution. So it's more just that I would target like a different player, not necessarily one that's better than Oubre, but like I think the only way I jump on a four is if you're like, this dude's our four for the next 5 years. And I'm not necessarily sure that that's Oubre. One kind of random thought for you guys. I was talking with Adam Mares the other day, and I asked him I was like, what do you think that Peyton Watson will get? And he said 3 for 75. And when he said that, I was like, I was like, ooh, okay. Like, I really like Peyton Watson at 3 for 75, but like Peyton's the kind of guy where you could be like, oh, this guy could start for us for the next several years. That's a completely different type of discussion.
But do you get him away from Denver? That's the,
well, you'd have to come in higher, right?
Jump on that.
Well, but okay, let's say it's 3 for 75, but you're a guaranteed starting spot instead of,
and then you need Peyton Watson to push and say, no, I want to do this deal with LA. Let's work a sign and trade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's go to this. Is it surprising that Houston's only favored by 5.5? I believe that's for game one. Favored by 5.5. It's a home game for the Lakers.
That's a pretty big. I mean, they're basically implying if this game was in Houston, they'd be saying it'd be like they'd be 9 to 10 point favorites. That's a pretty big. I'm actually a little surprised. I guess they've been the heavy Vegas favorite. Like Vegas is basically giving them like a 10% chance to win the series. It's a little bit high for game one, but I'm a little surprised. The implication here is it's too low. I think that, you know, that, yeah, the home team, I don't know. I think it's a little high for me.
I think it's more likely than not that the game is competitive and could go either way late, for the record. Mm-hmm. But there is like a good chance. Like, I'd put it at like somewhere between a 20 to 30% chance that the Lakers get their ass kicked. Like, it's on the table that they go out there and it's like, oh shit, like, we don't have the horses. So like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Lakers are going to be competitive. I think something like that is more likely to happen in Houston or in a game two if the Lakers stole game one. But like, there is a substantial talent disadvantage there, and it's on the table that the Lakers get raced.
I think it's a nod to the unpredictability too, where there's just so much unknown about what the Lakers are going to do just because they don't have Luka and Austin. There's not a big sample size of that. So I think this is kind of a playing a middle ground type of line here. So I'm not that surprised that that's where we're at. But, you know, there's a reason why the odds makers make the odds, and they're very good at it. So, all right, we do have some more questions and comments to get into. We'll get there in just 1 minute. We will be right back.
Starting something new isn't just hard. It's terrifying. There's always that moment before launching something where you're thinking, is this actually going to work? Whether it's starting a business, launching a product, or building something online, there are a lot of moving parts. And having the right tools behind the scenes can make a huge difference. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand. It's also packed with helpful AI tools that can write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. And Shopify helps you get the word out with email and social media campaigns so you can reach customers wherever they're scrolling. Plus, everything you need, inventory, payments, analytics, and more, is all in one place. So it's time to turn those what ifs into cha-ching with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/LakersPod. Again, that's shopify.com/LakersPod.
All right, we're going to get to a few more questions and comments. Let's go here. Got my tickets last night to game 3 in Houston. I'll bring DA's crunk juice. Thank you. I mean, much needed, apparently.
Sprinkle a little like Red Bull or something in there.
Yes.
maybe a fireball shot.
Whatever the strongest stuff you could find,
some kind of upper. Let's just make it happen.
I will not suggest anything illegal. All right. So, is DA the X factor for the series? By the way,
yeah, he's my X factor. I think. So, like, you think about that, Ime Udoka went small for stretches of that second and third game where he just kind of telegraphed he did not trust Clint Capella in this matchup. Now, I think that was Luka specific because of how they were trying to trap and rotate against Luka. And I don't know if they'll have the same game plan. I think they'll give Clint Capella a shot. But when they went small, I thought DA had a lot of success late in game two. He had the multiple offensive rebounds, multiple finishes. And then even in the third game, I thought when they went small, he was able to get some offensive rebounds and finishes inside. So, yeah, I think especially if they're going small, that's when I try to align DA with those minutes or quickly sub him back in. But, yeah, I mean, if he averages 18 and 10, I think the Lakers have a real shot to at least make this a very competitive series. But if he doesn't, then, you know, that's where it could be a shorter series.
You could argue in terms of sheer just physical traits, he's one of the top three or four guys in the series. Like, he's capable of dominating the series physically. He won't, I'm not saying, but he's capable of dominating the series physically. And if he does more often than not, that would be a huge swing factor in favor of LA.
Right. Rui and Luke's hesitation to shoot non-wide open threes could kill the Lakers. They will need to take contested shots. I think Luke's done a better job of that recently. That's also part of why we've seen his three-point percentage plummet since taking over that kind of lead ball handler role. He's just having less shots created for him. But to your point, yes, I do think the other guys are going to have to be more aggressive getting their shots off, because the perfect shot is not going to be there nearly as often. The Lakers are going to have to make sure that when they do get an opportunity there for a good shot, they pull the trigger. I think hunting for a great shot against a team as athletic when it comes to recovering and scrambling as Houston are, you're going to wind up passing up a good shot and then having to settle for a bad shot rather than creating a great shot.
Totally agree with you.
Agree.
Let's see. When is Adam Sliwa getting the invite? What? Not until you get the guy's name right. It's Alan. Come on. Mamadou said, hey, guys, who do you think the ninth guy will be? He played Bronny a lot at the end. We signed Nick Smith to a full contract. Who is the ninth man? And does the ninth man even play? Does JJ even use a nine-man rotation?
He seemed to indicate he will. I might zag a little bit here and say it's Maxi Kleba who gets the first look. And he's a guy that JJ clearly trusts, going back to game five last year where he throws him into the fire. But think about how many late game situations he's put him in, even in games he hasn't played. So I think all three, like JJ said, all hands on deck. He has said they're going to play nine. And I would not be surprised if they give multiple guys a shot at the ninth spot. But I think Maxi is going to factor in. And I would say at this point might be the guy I trust the most for the ninth spot. But like, I might just stick with eight personally.
The more interesting question is, who do you think we'll see first in the series, Nick or Bronny?
Might go Bronny.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Bronny first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just the way this is his longest stretch as like a rotation player, right? Like he's pretty much been a full-time rotation player now for several weeks. So yeah, I think it's Bronny.
I worry about guy the turnovers with Bronny.
I do too. I wonder if he could help us on the glass a little bit. Not that he's demonstrated some sort of dominant rebounding, but that he has the most vertical pop of any of those guards by far. Mm-hmm.
Tamara said, Jason stole Trev's hats. Kessler free agent, $35 million, LA.
I haven't worn a hat in a while.
Yeah, I guess we switch gimmicks here for the day. Kessler free agent, $35 million. There's a report from a couple of days ago that I just talked about over on the Basketball Bulletin that the Jazz not only want to keep Walker Kessler, but they want to get the deal done like fast so they can move on in free agency and not mess around with RFA stuff. I just don't see him getting free from Utah. Let's put it this way, kind of like we talked about with Peyton Watson just a moment ago, like he would have to demand a sign and trade, something like that. Walker Kessler is going to have to throw a fit, I think, to get out of Utah. And coming off a season where he only played five games, I think he's just going to say, hey, let's secure the bag right now while I can, especially since I just lost basically an entire season, rather than kick and scream and do everything he can to get out of Utah. I just don't see them letting him go without a major fight.
Yeah, I think that dream's over, guys.
Going to game one for my birthday. Hope they get me a win. Oh, I hope they do as well. Happy birthday to you, and hopefully the Lakers.
Happy birthday.
Hope so too, Michael.
Need DA Rui to rebound. Issue is they're both soft AF. That will be a key to the series. Not being soft AF.
I agree. I think that aggressive, but I agree that they need to rebound. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the whole roster has to play hard and tough.
Yeah. Yep. It's going to have to be. And that's where I think they're going to have to follow the Marcus Smart lead on that side of things. You know what I mean? Like his toughness is going to have to be contagious with the rest of the team. They're all going to have to follow along with that and play with that physicality and they're going to get punched in this series. They've got to punch back. They can't cower in the corner when that happens and turtle up. That's not going to work for them. And we'll see if they've got that kind of fight in them with this iteration of the team, because the Rockets are going to make them think about things. They're going to make them think, man, do I really want to box out again? Man, this is starting to hurt. This is getting physical. They're going to make them think about breaking. And it's on the Lakers to have that toughness to not do that and say, no, we're fighting through this entire series. You don't want the Lakers to start thinking, man, what kind of a shot do we really have? We don't have Luka. We don't have Austin. Am I really going to make that extra effort? They need to be locked in the entire game and not break, regardless of what the Rockets are throwing at them. And we'll see what kind of mental toughness they've got. I think taking Reed out of the series is key, this comment says. If you do that and Braun plays KD to a draw, do they have a better shot? Better shot, yes.
Don't forget about Sengun.
That's either, the like, thing.
Don't forget about it. I thought Amen Thompson was the second best player of the season series and Houston's best player. Amen Thompson absolutely, he averaged 24, 10, and 5 and shot 61% from the floor. Like he killed the Lakers.
Yeah. Out of the top five players in the series, how many are Lakers?
I think one.
So just taking Reed Sheppard out of the series and LeBron playing KD to a draw doesn't necessarily.
I don't even think Reed Sheppard's the fifth best. I think Jabari Smith. I mean, he averaged 19-7 against the Lakers in the season series too. Like one interesting thing for me was like I don't feel like any of the Lakers role players played consistently well. I think honestly, Jake might have been the best overall role player through the three games, but like you know, Marcus had hit a big shot. Rui had one game where he hit a big shot. But like Marcus and Rui didn't play that well. Vando played well in the Christmas game, didn't play again in the next two games. Jackson didn't really play well in the season series. He got kind of phased out. DA was very inconsistent. So it's like that also gives me a little bit of pause here. Like it's the Lakers, I feel like, didn't even play that great and still beat the Rockets, which I guess you could look at as a positive or a negative. But in terms of like translating to like from the season series, it was almost just like the Lakers big three outplayed Houston's like top 6-7, but there was not much to rely on outside of those top three.
You're going to need outlier positive performances from a number of guys on the Lakers roster on any given night if they're going to get the win in that night. And for the Lakers, I don't know this is so much about winning the series as it is about extending the series. And then maybe you give yourself a shot to get Luka or Austin back. And again, you got to be very careful and very cautious with that. But that has to be the goal right now. Just stay alive. Stay alive as long as you possibly can. And that also that applies to the series. That also applies to the individual games. You want to drag the Rockets into deep water. You want to get them into the fourth quarter with the game close and then fall back on what they've done in clutch time, which has not been good at all. The Rockets have been terrible in those situations where the Lakers, obviously that was with Luka and Austin, but they've been better. So for the Lakers, it's about surviving. Within each game, you want it to be close going into the fourth quarter. Give yourself a chance to close the thing out down the stretch. And then within the series, it's about fighting, living to fight another day all the way through. See if you can get to a game six. Can you get some of these guys back? Can you get to a game seven? And then you go from there. And we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But interesting to find out what things look like on Saturday. Thank you. Corrected the name there with this super chat. But we appreciate all of you guys for coming and hanging out with us today. You guys are absolutely fantastic. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you do hit the subscribe button. And guys, we got a playoff game that we're going to get to break down next week.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Very excited. So we'll be back on Monday, and then we haven't figured out the end of the week, but we'll obviously react to game one.
Probably Wednesday, that's my guess. Yeah. Monday, Wednesday next week. Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.